With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Rob Gutman, Cathy Long and Alison McGovern to talk about, my word, there's so much to talk about. West Ham United 0, Liverpool 3. The transfer situation as it's unfolding, but we need to make clear to you right now that as I'm speaking, it is 11:13. So when you're listening to this, you will be in possession of far, far, far more numbers of fact than we are right now. And obviously we'll be looking ahead to Brighton as well. But we will focus in on what was a terrific Liverpool result. And an excellent Liverpool performance, Cathy. Liverpool opted for first half and showed control. And I think it's quite interesting. We've had goalless periods in games recently where it's felt like that's not been our choice. The way we start the match against West Ham, we're very, very happy to have a quiet game that we control, at least for 45 minutes, I thought.
Yeah, and I think it's still taken some getting used to, this idea, isn't it? You know, because you see the team and you're looking at it and going, well, why isn't Curtis starting? You know, because instantly we want to be on the front foot and we're thinking, right, you know, why don't we just go from the off, you know, like get some goals. Let's, you know, and the manager obviously sees it differently, like, you know, control the game first, you know, he's got a plan, which can be frustrating because it does feel sometimes like, oh my God, we're just passing it around. And, you know, we're just hoping that something's going to change. And it does feel like that sort of lunacy of just doing the same thing and hoping for a different outcome for about half an hour. But I think they're getting the outcome they want, as you say. I think that it's about controlling the game, you know. It's about shifting their players out of position. It's about wearing them down, you know. And it really does seem like it's got this plan of sort of, like, absolutely wear them down, run them completely ragged so that they just... It's like some sort of interrogation, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's like just sort of wear them out and then pull the big guns on, you know. It's like then the other guy comes into the room and, you know, insists on answering his question and you sort of give in, you know. And I mean, it's got to be one of my favourite moments in football, Milner and Klopp yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just brilliant. Klopp's explaining to him what he's doing. And Millie's like, oh, well, all right, yeah, whatever. And then walks off and just bursts out laughing.
It is a team selection, Ali, that just sort of raises eyebrows or is a blow. A little bit of both, obviously. It looks like Origi's in for Mane because of an injury, but Shaqiri in for Firmino looks like it might be tactical or rest orientated. But off the back of this season, where every single time you look at a Liverpool team sheet and you do in your own head the list of lads who we wish were playing, it did seem like another one where you were going, oh God, and there's no Van Dijk and there's no Gomez and there's no Matip and there's no Keita and now there's no Mane. And it was another team sheet where you were looking at it when the wind was taken out of your sails.
Yeah, I feel like there ought to be like a team sheet of injuries. Like if we do our team sheet of injuries, it's actually like a really good team. You know, if we like kind of rack them all up. But we might have a problem in goal. But apart from that, if we had a team sheet of injuries, it would be an excellent side. And I think it's one of those games where, you know, I wasn't relishing yesterday at all. It felt like, oh, West Ham in the rain. This isn't going to go well. You've got that sense of foreboding. And when you look at the team sheet, even more so. But clearly, you know, actually, we have to remember that the players that do get picked are also good. And as Cathy said, there's a purpose to this. There's a rationale behind it. And I'd say definitely the first 15 minutes, maybe even up to 20, were a real grind, something to be got through. And then it's like slowly but surely the Klopp plan emerges. And it could have gone wrong. Of course, it could have gone wrong. This is a very difficult bit of the season to get through in a very difficult season. And you think about the games we've got coming up, you know, this is going to be the pivot game, right? This is a very challenging scenario. So when we're in that challenging scenario without what we would think of as our fundamentally, you know, most skillful players, it's a worry. But there was more method than it first appeared in Klopp's mind, clearly.
I think one of the aspects of this method, Rob, is it actually reminds me a little bit of what I've seen Manchester City do this season. The number of times City, whilst they've been on the good run they've been on, I've been watching them not feeling like they're particularly likely, but feeling like they're absolutely in control. And then there comes a point where they do suddenly look likelier, and they've gone on a bit of a journey to reach that point, I think it's fair to say, City. And I do wonder whether or not we've had a little look at that, we've had a little look inwardly, because it was an exceptionally solid first half, a few chances for either side. And I think, strangely, our lack of ambition almost seemed to bleed the ambition out of West Ham United, in that they were a bit like, no, you're not meant to be doing this, so please do the thing that we expected you to do so that we could hurt you. And we didn't give them even the slightest sniff, really, for the whole of the first 45, apart from maybe one or two soft free kicks.
Yeah, it was very much in the... It looked like, and I thought I was comforted by once I sort of thought about it this way, sort of midway through, and you thought, are we ever going to actually make a chance here? But you then thought, no, this is like a tough European Cup away thing, right? Yeah. And if it's a tough European Cup away, they're a very strong, informed team, then this is perfectly acceptable. And in fact, you'd see how you would win the game in that context. It's funny, it's easy to see how you can win the game when you think about it as a European away than you think about it as a Premier League game you want 3 points from. So European away, it happens the way it should happen, which is it's tight, it's attritional, and then people tire and spaces emerge. And it's quite a typical pattern in football. But in the spirit of a Premier League game, you're as a fan, and I think often as a player, you're imbued with an impatience, which makes it feel like it's going wrong when actually it's going exactly right. I think in a sense, two things surprised me. I think Liverpool had more control than I thought they'd have, but that's because West Ham seemed to lack a lot of ambition. Well, I couldn't tell if they were lacking ambition or Liverpool were doing it right. I think in the sec, there were signs that half-time David Moyes would have said to them, I think we're lacking ambition. I think we're here for they're there for the taking. And I think somebody in commentary used those terms about us, which made me bristle. I don't like anyone say that about us. We are never there for the taking. We never forget that. But it just made, combined with the fact that they were a little bit more tired from having been pulled from side to side for 45 minutes, by the time the second half started, there was just 2% more gap. And we found it straight away. And that was just incredible to see.
Just on that, Rob, there's three things I think that need to be sort of taken into account. One is that we get the half-time and Klopp says, we talked about where we thought the spaces were a little bit post-match, which I think is interesting, the idea of 45 minutes where we get to effectively get a video of where the spaces are and then show the players and say this, this and this. I think the second thing that happens is quite quickly, at the start of the second half, both Souček and Rice end up on yellow cards. And the third thing that we sort of forget and maybe take for granted is that we're very used to the two games a week thing, but West Ham aren't. And I do wonder if all three of those things are sort of combine into giving Liverpool all the encouragement they need to make the Curtis Jones sub, to be front foot, and to suddenly go, no, we can really exploit these.
I think that's a really good point, actually. I mean, I watched West Ham in the week. They actually have two more days rest than us.
They were excellent against Palace.
But they did begin to run out of steam a little bit. They're like a Liverpool 2016-17 incarnation in some respects. They're full of energy. They can blow you away in half an hour or so. But then again, they will let you back into the game. I was surprised by their lack of intensity in that first half. And I think they decided they were going to pace themselves and time their run, perhaps. But it never came for them. As you say, they're not in the rhythm that we are. There's no getting away from something. This Liverpool side under Klopp enjoys playing two games a week and is at its best when it plays two games a week. The worst thing that happens for it is getting a full week's rest sometimes, or certainly getting more than a full week's rest. It's a very, very, I know causation and correlation and all that, but it's very easy to see a pattern emerging when you look back at the history of Liverpool under Klopp. Big gaps between games do not yield good results. Small gaps somehow do.
In terms of that introduction,
isn't that just fitness? Am I reading into this?
It's rhythm. In theory, I think in theory, Klopp has also said, "Oh, great, we've got a full week to work on the training pitch. We can catch our breath, this, that, and the other." But Liverpool seem to lose match rhythm and intensity by doing that. I know what you mean. What you're saying, I think, is, if you play more, you're getting fitter playing more, therefore you're better at playing more. I agree. Yeah, go figure. I know, but that's not what they sort of say, is it? It's a theory.
I think there's probably like an optimum spot, isn't there? It's like you need, there's no intensity that you can replicate, I would imagine, in training of like the combination of adrenaline and speed of thinking and speed of physicality. So like you need to do that regularly enough to be good at it. Whereas I guess that sort of makes sense, right? That you've got to be able to cope with that level of intensity. And maybe it just is true that like if you too long of a gap, you know, you just lose that kind of like match fitness. It sounds like weirdly simple, but actually I think too much of a rest would be a bad thing in this circumstance. It sort of makes sense.
Is it a bit like I've mentioned Milner, I'm sure we'll come back to it, but you know, it seemed that Milner apparently was saying to Klopp, "Why am I coming off?" And he told him not to run. You know, he'd said to him, "Don't run too much." And then he says, "Why am I coming off?" And he says, "Because I need to bring a runner on." Mother's looking at him like, but I want to run. Like, you told me not to run. And then you're bringing me off because you're bringing a runner on. And Klopp's going, "Yeah, but I need you on Wednesday, you know." And then he comes off and the runner comes on and we score. But it's that management, you know, you can see Milner just looking like,
"What?" 35, dude.
There's that, Cathy. But one of the things I'd say is that in the moment, and I'm not saying this sort of full stop, because I think Milner firstly was perfectly fine yesterday and has been excellent recently. But you look at our subs and you look at their subs, every single one of their subs, and they played the same 11 that they played against Palace, and we knew that. But every single, and you look at their bench, every sub makes them weaker. And you look at our bench, and there's an argument, at least, that every sub, even including the Origi injury one that's forced, makes us stronger. And I think that that's something which Klopp, to an extent, again, sort of took his fine line gamble on, of if we get to 60, I will make changes and we will be better in the final third. And I think that that again shows when Rob talks of it as sort of European style management, or when I refer to having the experience of going game to game and the depth of squad that you get because you're used to it because of the Champions League, you get to see that from Liverpool there. Cathy?
I think so. So I didn't know you were coming back to me. Yeah, I think so. And it's strange now that we're, you know, it's almost like I've forgotten about Champions League matches because it seems like such a long time ago, you know. I think there's all of this management that's going on there, isn't it? Which is about the fitness of our players. Is, you know, we've had all these injuries and yet there's times when we want players to just keep playing, you know, and some of them, it's obviously taken them a while to get back into it. You know, it seems to have taken Trent a long time to play back into it. And I always say this, but I just think the intensity of the way that we play, it's designed to be football in front of a crowd. You know, it's designed to feed off the crowd. It's designed to be powered by the crowd. It's one of the things that Klopp understands more than most. And I'm not saying we always have a good impact. It's not always that, you know, sometimes we're getting too anxious. We want the team to push forward and Klopp's thinking, no, you know, we just want to keep the ball for a bit. But I think it's tough to keep up that level of intensity in that weird silent atmosphere.
I think so. I think that that's in the context of what we struggled with, Ali, this season. That's why you said before it feels almost a little bit like a pivotal win. And in the context of all of those struggles, the season as a whole, battling against this reality we have to play football in and the nature of the starting 11, I did come away from it feeling like it was such a significant 3 points for Liverpool.
It is a significant 3 points. Just go back to something Cathy said there that I think is right in the context of it, that obviously, like the 60 minute mark shift that Klopp does really well in the game, like yes, that is designed to increase the intensity of the final half an hour, like because we're gonna turn it up a notch, I do think that is where, being honest, you have to say that not having a crowd makes a difference, because of course they're shouting at each other and of course there's like there must be some sense of tension in the ground, but you know, you could imagine the final 30 yesterday would have been quite a thing for the crowd to be a part of. The run of games we've got coming up next, my goodness, if we'd lost yesterday, you know, looking ahead, that it would have felt really daunting, I suppose. And we need, I mean, in some senses, how much the team selection was how much yesterday's game was a part, the team selection was a part of, what the selection's going to be over the next five games or so. I don't quite know, but I'm sure that it will have been a factor. And I think in looking ahead at these games, getting us within striking distance so that the City game has real, you know, force and is really important, rather than just like yet another massive hurdle that we've got to overcome in points terms. You know, I think it was really important, and that's why I think yesterday was a massive turning point for us.
Ali mentioned City there, Rob. It's obviously on the horizon, but again, to go back to maybe learning a bit from City and also to an extent Manchester United. United haven't had anywhere near the level of control in matches that Manchester City have or that we have had in the past and at our best. But it's interesting to me that, for instance, United score 3 second half goals against West Ham, that there's a number of games this season against the poorer sides where United have been very much second best for a period of time and then have managed to strike hard in the second half. It's something you've seen from City recently as well. That maybe, we've just had a little look at what's worked for other people and decided that actually we can put our chips a bit later in games. We can maybe choose to use your European away analogy or choose to look at the somewhat harem scarum nature of Manchester United. And we can say, well, we can do that as well in these matches. We can choose to go the full 90 if we need it.
Maybe. Well, I've noticed City have got themselves back in that annoying habit of scoring goals in the first 20 minutes.
Playing West Brom and rubbish at the minute, Rob.
I know. I'm loathe to give United the credit for having stumbled across anything here. I'll make a general...
Well, it is a stumbling in that it's because they've been poor, they've had to pull it out of the fire, is what but it's worked.
You may have something in it. The one thing that's difficult to do in this season is to write the story of any one team, because we've all flattered to deceive, right? Every man jack of us have done that, and City have. It's just they're not doing their flattering to deceive at the moment. But they said, you know, well, sorry, they did the inverse of it. I'm bullshitting here, but Tottenham looked like they had a system, albeit people were, hey, early December, Mourinho's caution was suddenly coming through. He was reborn as a manager. You could see what was happening. Look at Tottenham, top of the league. Then we've had recently a similar parallel narrative about Man United. And it hasn't entirely unravelled, but they've had two games where you think, I can quite easily see how they might look a very ordinary team again within 2 or 3 weeks.
Absolutely.
The same Leicester, sensational for a bit. And then, what the fuck? I mean, I'll even throw Everton and West Ham into the mix. Why not? You know, West Ham suddenly looked remarkably ordinary again yesterday. And you quite easily see how, having had their spell broken, they may not win many of their next five. I don't know. So it's really, really... So whilst I think you may have a point, I'm also very, very loath to draw any conclusions at all about fucking anything this season, because it's so weird.
One conclusion you can draw, Rob, is that Mohamed Salah is absolutely incredible. The second goal's the stuff of dreams, to be honest with you. The key decisions are Arnold's and Shaqiri's, but the sheer sort of magic, to be quite honest with you, of the touch and the finish, it is just incredible stuff from him. It genuinely is like breathtaking.
Yeah. And hopefully you always feel when Mo does his iconic things, like, you know, two of those goals were vintage Mo Salah goals, really.
Yeah.
You feel they tend to inject something into the Liverpool cause, which becomes more enduring. I'll say that, not wanting to tempt fate, because when he scores that absolute worldie against Palace in the 7-0, I thought the same thing, and it didn't work out that way. But, yeah, when Salah plays well, Liverpool look majestic. There's no doubt about it. Liverpool look a different level of side. And those were world-class moments. I mean, his feet have to move so incredibly quickly to make that goal. That's not a chance at all. And in truth be told, although, is it Trent's ball and then Shaqiri's balls? Oh, wonderful balls. They can't expect that bit of control that Salah provides that ends in the goal. It's incredible.
Do you think Shaqiri does, though? I mean, I take your general point of you can't rely on X, Y, or Z, but I think this is a real moment of Xherdan Shaqiri going, he's brilliant. So I'm going to do this first time because he is amazing. I train with him every day. I know how good he is. I am going to play. The manager afterwards says, as I said, don't play it first time. And it's like Shaqiri goes, no, he's boss, watch this.
Yes, I do. But I also think Shaqiri is a is I want to play with a big boys footballer. Do you know what I mean? He is, yeah. I'm only playing one way, like I'm the fucking best in the world, Jordan Shaqiri. And you've got to be the best in the world if you want to play with me, which is slightly odd, but I think we just saw a bit of that and what you're saying, that he knows it's handy to have Mo Salah on the end of anything you hit really hard.
Because balls that would look kind of like a ridiculous punt, when Salah gets to them, even if Salah doesn't really make anything of them, it's like, oh yeah, of course he hit it that ridiculously hard, like that ridiculous, like what looks like an overkick, like because he knows it's for Mo. And I thought yesterday there was several of those balls in the first half, and the rain and the kind of weightiness of the pitch like made them kind of thud and look a bit more like lumping than they actually were. But that was just the weather. And then when the goal finally comes, you're like, oh, he knows what he's doing, absolutely, because Mo Salah's on the end of it.
I think his second touch on that, it's very hard to control in one. I think if he controls it absolutely perfectly, which is virtually an impossible thing to do in physics terms, right? If he does it perfectly, he actually buys the goalkeeper half a second. But the slight bobble on his first touch, it makes his second touch a piece of control and a finish all in one, which is fascinating if you watch it through a microscope, which I decided to do virtually.
It's with it, Kathy. I think it is this idea that there's something about the way Salah goes about and has gone about his business that he has at times made the magical look mundane. And that nearly happens with this, you know, the idea of Shaqiri's ball and where that is. That nearly happens with this, that he's almost made something that is so incredible just look like it's what I do, because he very rarely finishes with a flourish or anything like that. He just gets the ball in the net. And he's doing this every game. He does things that are incredible at unbelievable speed, off balance every match, and he makes it look like it's run of the mill.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's made me think about, you know, these balls we're talking about from Shaq and stuff, because sometimes it can seem when he's trying to thread balls in the box that it's frustrating, because as Ali says, you know, it's like he's just acting like, well, you know, I'm always passing the ball to someone as good as Messi or whatever. You know, I'm always going to give the ball to someone like this. So him and Firmino both, I think, have this habit that can be frustrating, because you're thinking, what are you doing? You're never going to thread it through there. But the thing is, they know they can. And they know that with Salah on the end of it, that he can put it in the net, you know, that he can do the impossible. You know, they look like impossible balls sometimes. And you think, what are you doing playing these impossible balls? But they're not impossible where Mo's concerned, you know. I'm sure I wasn't the only one that when Shaq hit that ball was sitting next to someone who just shouted, fuck off, really, really loudly. Shaqiri. So I was saying it was like a Steven Gerrard, Xabi Alonso moments at Luton. He's like, what the fuck are you doing, you know? And then the ball's in the net.
On him, Kathy, he is genuinely, and I think again in part, he's sort of in strange ways, really, because he's had unbelievable worldwide renown. He's a worldwide icon, but it still feels in odd little ways his light ends up getting a little bit hidden by maybe all of his teammates, the Liverpoolness of the thing. But he has become one of the truly great Liverpool goal scorers, and I mean one of the truly great ones, one of the all time of everybody who's ever kicked the ball in the goal for Liverpool. He is up there with the very, very best.
I think it's astonishing what he's doing. And I think it is strange that he is not really, I don't think he really gets the love that he deserves, really. And the respect certainly outside of Liverpool. It's like it's like there's this idea, you know, he's one of the front three. You know, people just talk about the front three, and it is absolutely incredible that we've got those three and our top 20 all-time goal scorers who are all playing at the same time.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's amazing to have one player on your team that gets in there, but to have three is just ridiculous. And to have him playing when he's not always, you know, he's not just playing as the only sole out-and-out striker. He's got other guys that want to score alongside him, you know. And I like the fact that the strikers can be selfish. You know, I'd always rather that they had a shot than that they're not prepared to have a go in front of goal. And there were a few others yesterday where he just very nearly, you know, did his moment of brilliance again. And he also works so hard up and down the pitch. Not everybody seems to see it, but I think he does, you know.
Yep.
He's often the first one bringing the ball out after a corner. He's defending, you know. And it is sometimes people, I think, criticise him because he does try to do the impossible a lot, and it's not always going to work, you know. It's not always maybe the right ball, you know, but it's always a good ball. But it's just might not be the right decision all of the time. But I think he's phenomenal. And I think as well, he feeds off a crowd. you know. Yeah, and I think, really, you know, fair. What he said in his interview about VAR, you know, we know that when, you know, the players wanted the goal music that we all hate, because they hated the fact that when they were scoring at Anfield, there was just silence.
Yeah.
And I think that must be really hard to be used to. Basically, everything you do all week, whether you eat or sleep or everything, is geared towards you putting the ball in the back of the net and there being this immense noise, there being this incredible celebration and this massive release. And then you do it and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know? But if
Mo should have had his shirt off.
Is the goal stand? Oh, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. You know, it's like, that's it.
It stops those Mo taking his shirt off moments. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
VAR and no crowd. It's like, what are you taking your shirt off for, Mo? Yeah, put it back on. Some.
And he loves the beauty, the beauty of the game, you know, like the goal that was disallowed last week, you know, and he's talking about it like, because he's just gutted that this beautiful goal is not stood, you know.
It's weird parallel universe, isn't it? In as much as we watch, when you watch on the, I watch it with the fake crowd noise on. And
oh, I don't.
Don't you? Well, I do. And I get totally lost in it. As if it's football on telly as it's always been. I'm totally oblivious to the fact there's no fans in the ground after a few minutes. But then sometimes when you watch it back, say on the LFC TV highlights, where they only have it without the fans, you go, oh my God, it's like I've been watching them. They never had any pants on. Yeah. It's like, oh, I didn't know.
Yeah,
I was watching
football,
something that was something else. It's very, very strange dawning of realisation. Yeah, I'm not sure that's the right analogy, but you know what I mean.
I don't like it because we sing the wrong songs at the wrong times. It just never feels right, and I get distracted by it. And I'm going, well, we wouldn't be singing that now, you know, when we're not singing the new song when we should be, and it's about 4 years old, you know. It's like clock football with a Rodgers soundtrack.
I don't know, they don't half go with the Bobby Firmino song, and I think, yeah, that's us. Yeah. We never fucking sing anything else anymore.
Yeah.
Looking at the where this places Salah in general, Ali, and by in general I mean over 100 years of history, he is the first Liverpool player since Rush to break 20 in four consecutive seasons. For further context on that, Dalglish and Keegan never did it. The only others I can find, nor did Owen, nor did Fowler, nor did Torres, the only others I can find are the top four all-time scorers. Rush, obviously, Hunt, Gordon Hodgson, Liddle. This is the conversation where Mo Salah is with the people who played before World War II, with Liverpool's absolute leading lights in goal scoring terms. You know, Mo Salah may not end up, hopefully he does, but he may not end up playing enough games for Liverpool to break 200 goals all comps. But his ratio and the intensity with which he scored those goals puts him up there with Hodgson, with Hunt, with Liddle, with Rush.
I mean, hopefully he does. Hopefully he does. And in part, hopefully, that's because the side is the right side for him to be playing in. You know, I sort of take the implied point that, you know, maybe he himself might have ideas or ambitions about playing elsewhere, but the elsewhere teams that might have been that ideal have changed quite a bit recently. So hopefully we are the ideal team for him to play, and we certainly are now. Whether that's true across the next 3-4 seasons, who knows? But, like, I mean, hopefully he does. I think he's an incredibly interesting player to watch, because perhaps unlike those historical greats, his touch is incredible, but you watch him think through the game as well. Like, you watch him try 17 different ways around a set of defenders, all of whom are desperately trying to stand on him or hold him back or do whatever they can to make themselves physically bigger than him, which is not hard because he's quite a slight person. And he's got incredible speed, but he's got incredible speed of thought that goes along with it, that means that it can sometimes take him a little bit of time in a game if the, you know, side are defensively set up well. But you watch him think through where the gap is and where the opportunity will come tactically, as well as, you know, it's not just that he's got an amazing touch, which obviously great goal scorers have to have. So I think he's fascinating in a way that is new in that list of greats.
The other way that he's different from that list of greats, Rob, from certainly from three of them, Liddle's an interesting comparison, is that obviously he starts from wide. And he still gets most of these Liverpool goals from wide. The one thing I would say, though, is that if you get any decent, and trust me, there are a few out there, and trust me, they all bear watching on repeat, any decent compilation of Ian Rush goals, you can see a few. I mean, because if you score that many goals as Ian Rush and over this period of time Mo Salah has, there's only a finite number of ways to score a goal. So, you know, we can't go too far with this. But there are, in that sort of... In that sort of, one of the things with Rushy is that you forget that Rushy scored all different types of goals, if you see what I mean. Sally, you sort of accept that he's scoring all different types of goals, but it is this single-minded desire that the ball will go into the back of the net. And if I've got to do it from a long ball that I take down brilliantly and then dink it in, I'll do it that way. If I've got to do it driving it from 25 yards, I'll do it that way. If I've got to do it on a rebound, I'll do it that way. There is that single-minded aspect that I think is in there, but it is interesting that he's done this from right wing.
Yeah, I although his statistics bring him to be have this thing in common with those kind of strikers, very little else, not very little, but a lot doesn't. He's more in the same category as a Thierry Henry or maybe a Cristiano Ronaldo when he's younger. The likes of Rush, and let's pick another one, Lineker from that era, even Lewandowski, they're all about, the predominant part of their game is about gambling, as they used to be the expression, gambling to be in the space where a ball will arrive. And although Rush, the likes of Ian Rush, do score all kinds of goals, most of them, like Lewandowski's, are goal scorer goals. And although poacher, those that what we're thinking of when we say that, I suppose, is poached goals. And although Salah is very, very good at those as well, he's far more purely his own work. Like the first, not the second one, but the first one. The one where it just doesn't happen. It's sort of an assist from Curtis Jones, isn't it? And he injects some energy into the situation. And he deserves a lot of credit for his involvement in that first goal. But that first goal is almost Salah's own work. And the likes of those other great goal scorers, not many of their goals were entirely all their own work. Although it'd be disingenuous to say that they purely need supply, but in a literal sense, they sort of did. Am I making my point clear?
You are making your point clear. And just for Mo, you know, he gets the goal that he gets yesterday, Cathy. We're still approximately only halfway through the season. It's 21 league games out of 38 plays. It's, you know, there's still, we hope we've still got seven more games to play in the Champions League. On top of that, we've only had six group games so far. This is a season where he's already got 21. In his first season, he gets 44, and he accelerates it around this phase of the season, not around this date because it's a bit different, it's all a bit skewed, but around this phase of the league season is when he starts to score in twos and threes and in one instance in fours. And you do sort of wonder whether or not that 40 goal mark, and this is an outrageous thing to say, but that goal, 40 goal in a season mark, might be there for him this year.
I think it might be, and I think if we have a good run in the Champions League, you know, that will certainly have an impact. And I think, you know, and apparently, according to a lot of people, you know, he's not really been on form lately. So you know, if this is when he's not in form, then as you say, once he gets into form, it's going to be astonishing. Yeah, no, I don't think it's impossible. And I think it is incredible what he's managed to do so far. As you say, playing on the right with other strikers, you know, and he finds a way. As you say, in whatever system we're sort of playing at the time and with whatever players, you know, this is without the best players on the pitch. You know, this is without balls from Van Dijk. This is about, you know, one of the things I think that we've probably all said is about how much we miss our defenders when we're attacking, you know, because they're the ones who set up the attacks and often will put those balls in. And he's playing that without necessarily having always the best providers, you know, with Henderson playing at centre-back, not in midfield. I think it's not too ridiculous to suggest it could happen if he is probably the only player to stay fit, if he is, but if he can stay fit.
If he can stay fit, indeed. Centre-halves haven't been able to stay fit. But yesterday, both of them, Cathy, were excellent, I thought. And they also had a rhythm, which I think is quite interesting. They felt like a centre-back partnership. And that's a little bit surprising. Phillips attacks, Henderson reads. You'd think they both go again Wednesday. And while Brighton were excellent against Tottenham and are better than the league placing suggests in open play, you're comfortable enough, I think, right now with Phillips and Henderson. I thought Phillips's positional discipline was better. He was in the line. He comes for things. They just felt like they'd been playing together for a year.
They did, honestly. And it's one of those things where you suddenly realise that you haven't really been worrying about the defence. You haven't really been worrying about the centre-backs. And, OK, we were keeping the ball really well. So a lot of the time we didn't have to worry about that. But I think, you know, I keep saying that I think we really miss Henderson in midfield. And that's been my worry, is that his energy and drive in midfield is missing when he's playing at the back. But so I've been obsessing, I suppose, like we all have, about the centre-backs. And then think, well, but if we can fix that in midfield and Henderson does move to centre-back for a while, or maybe that is where he ends up, as Milner said. Milner said to me, you'll end up there for the rest of your career. Maybe you will, you know. I think they looked really, really natural. And I think, you know, we've all seen, haven't we, how much Henderson talks on the pitch, and I think that's really helpful. That I think when he's got someone there as well who is constantly just you know, telling him what he needs to hear, encouraging him, directing play, as you say, reading the game, then Phillips just steps into that like he's just always been there. He actually looks very calm, you know.
I think he can run a game from there, Jordan. I think he was absolutely. Mm. I think he's been sensational in that position. I mean, I know he had his first game there. There was a few question marks. I think Southampton, where he played there, was his first, but one of the recent firsts. But I think he's looking exceptional. Maybe we'll all be made to look stupid if he gets ragged everywhere by Man City in a week's time. But if you sort of gave me a choice, do I want him there or Fabinho there, and I can have one of them back in midfield? Just right now, my gut tells me I'd really quite like Fabinho, Thiago and Wijnaldum against City and Jordan at the back, maybe with Nat Phillips or one of the new centre-halves, who knows. I like Jordan. I think the main thing about Jordan Henderson, I think we all should have learnt, it's not really about where he plays. It's about having him on the pitch. And that's not to sort of diminish him by just saying he's just a leader or a presence. But I just think he's got the intelligence to contribute. I mean, it's also not such a leap backwards from his playing in number six role to playing 10 yards further back. It's not night and day. I think it might be more night and day for Fabinho, really, in a sense. And I think having him back in midfield might be the greater win than having Jordan back there. And I think Jordan, I don't know, he feels like he can read a game that bit better than Fabinho. And Fabinho looks a really good centre-back to me. So I don't know.
We don't have to have the answer, Ali. We don't need to worry about that too much. The one thing that we can say, though, is...
Do we that, not? That's great news.
The one thing that we can say, though, is that we need to have faith in what we're working on. And with Phillips, I think he puts a performance in, which does offer you that sort of faith that, firstly, whether it's him or whether or not it's an incoming central defender, that if you give Liverpool players and time to work with teammates, they'll be able to find a way as a collective, as part of this squad, with this manager at this time.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because I think, like, given what's happened and given the situation that we're facing, I think it's very arguable that we should be looking to bring in contingency options. I don't think that says anything about any of our existing players. I think that says we are in a very difficult situation because there's a global pandemic on, and that is causing issues and problems that are unpredictable and difficult. And what might normally transfer windows be like a very well thought out and like planned years in advance process is not going to be this season, because there are challenges that couldn't be reasonably be expected. I think second point, I think Rob's right about Jordan. I think he takes the role of captain, you know, much more seriously and much more thoroughly than many others do. I think he sees his role as understanding the game plan and delivering that. He is like the manager on the pitch. That is his role, in a way that for a lot of captains, obviously, you know, theoretically they could do that if they're really good, but you have to be a skilled reader of the game and understand other people's roles just as well as your own. And that's why it's that step backwards is, I think, looks and feels more natural for him, because he does genuinely seem to understand other people's roles as well as his own. So, yes, like we definitely, I think, having Fabinho back in the number six makes more sense. But I think it just goes to show how lucky we are to have somebody who's got that level of intelligence and understanding of the game, and also commitment to how he interacts with the other players. You know, all of that stuff watching, you know, did you see that all of those internet videos of the like him? I think the club put one out, right? Of basically like the just the audio of everything that he was saying to the other players. And that really matters, right? Because that speeds up those other players' reactions. Because if all you need to really do is listen to Jordan, then that gives you so much confidence as a player on the pitch. So then that does make it easier to bring in and out other players. And it does give, no doubt, gives Phillips a level of confidence in being able to step into that role. So yes, he's completely brilliant. No, it's not an ideal situation where we are with centre-backs, but it's manageable if you get the connections between players right, such that people can come in and fulfil roles that they, you know, that they wouldn't, in a perfect world, be playing.
There's, in what Ali's saying, Rob, you know, we talk about football and intelligence a lot. There is a lot to be said for the idea of someone who, broadly speaking, and how long this is sustainable for, I will actually make the point. You know, certainly your own game's got to be absolutely on it to be able to talk a lot of other people through it at the same time, and also go doing that game by game, all the new load of information that will be tweaked around the margins. But I think that's what you're seeing from Henderson. We're lucky to get the clips. We wouldn't normally get that. It is one of the positives of the fact that the football's being played without the crowds. One of the few positives, very few positives, is that we do get to hear that and get that little bit of insight. But he is able, isn't he, to sort of at least know what the back seven's job is around him and be able to pass that along pretty consistently.
Yeah, I think there's some footballers to whom talking a lot in the game actually helps them concentrate. I think it's part of their process. And I think he's one of them. And they then naturally become the natural leader figures in teams. And as you say, adapting to roles is what he does. Yeah, he's just a sort of total footballer, isn't he, in the Dutch sense, in that he plays every position. I think he must be a dream for I know this is a cliche for a manager. And the other cliche would be, if you could just have one more of him, that would be great. there's three characters. Maybe you throw Van Dijk in as the fourth character, but him, Milner, and Andy Robertson, I think, are sort of unique presences. No, they're not unique, actually, because there's three of them, and maybe four. But they're important presences because they're the biggest talkers in that squad. And some might say Gini Wijnaldum, I think he's a more quiet version of them, but I think they're absolutely vital that you have that throughout the pitch. And I do think it's part, I don't think it's just because they're natural leads. I think it's part of their process. I genuinely do, the talking.
I think the same could well be said over a period of time, Cathy, for Alcantara. He's very, very demonstrative on the pitch.
Yeah.
If anything, he grows into that game massively, I think. As Liverpool improve, he improves. As we quicken, he's part of us quickening. He's got to be careful around his free kicks, but we can't let him lose that edge either, because I think that is an intriguing part of his game, that he's got this wholehearted commitment, not just for him, but for everybody else.
Yeah, I think he's just got to stay on his feet. I don't mind him, you know, going in and making sure that he gets the ball. And like you said, we don't want to lose that commitment from him. But I do think he does look really surprised, you know, when he goes to the floor, like, and he's like, what have I done wrong? And he would just stand up, man, you know, like, you can't get away with that. I mean, maybe I've not watched enough football in Germany lately, but you know, he seems to it's like it's a habit that he can't sort of kick at the moment, and he's looking genuinely surprised when free kicks are given. But yeah, I mean, he's obviously a real leader too, and I mean, it's astonishing to have so many leaders on the pitch. You know, I always thought, you know, our great teams in the past that were teams that went on to have a lot of people who went into management, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, some of them made it, some of them, but a lot of them had good cracks at being managers. And then we had this phase where you couldn't see any of them being managers, and they weren't. The United team that was so successful, you know, loads of managers came out of that era from that side, you know, with Steve Bruce, Roy Keane. I mean, so many of them went on to manage. And this feels like the sort of team now where you can do that. And I think with Alcantara, his reading of the game is just brilliant. You know, the passes that he sees and the opportunities that he creates. You know, there were quite a few times yesterday where he put absolutely brilliant balls into the box that just were astounding, and we just didn't quite get on the end of, or they were red or whatever, but they weren't the wrong ball. It was the right decision to try it, you know. And I think as the rest of the team learn, you know, what he does and what he can give us and all the rest of it, it will only improve.
other one who's very selfless yesterday is Origi Alisson. I think he shows his potential really for the idea of games where we want to do what we've discussed, you know, almost pummel them a bit into submission for 60 minutes and then improve. Yes, he stays on. A goal would have been nice, but he broadly speaking looks after it well, and he was one where I see the team sheet and I think, oh God, Divock. And then even at half time, you're able to, oh God, Divock it a little bit. But ultimately, in the context of the 3-0 win, he holds it up, he brings people into play, he occupies defenders, he's big and difficult to deal with, and he looks to get involved. And I do sort of wonder whether or not he could benefit from someone like Thiago being on the pitch as well.
I think so. I think also, like, I think he is... Okay, so we should never compare his kind of skill level to Salah or even, you know, Firmino on his most amazing, miraculous days, because that's not necessarily his role. And also, like, you can't, you know, you've got to recognise, like, people have got their own contribution to make to the game. Not everybody can be, like, if everybody had to be as amazingly skillful as Mo Salah to be in the Liverpool side, no one else would be in the Liverpool side. So that's a ridiculous, like, there's no good saying, like, well, he's not as good as Mo. Like, well, he's not going to be. So that would be a crazy thing to say. I think that, yes, he offers a kind of a different option. And when you're playing a side like West Ham, where, you know, as you know, there were yellow cards and things, and like they're gonna like be, you know, aggressive. He offers that, but also like he is pretty fast, and I think he does like create space really well. And yeah, I don't shudder when he's on the team sheet.
I do.
Kathy well, shudders. Rob, do you shudder?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always hopeful, but I do, and I was calling for his halftime substitution, but that's
you
more
love
about that.
Calling for a but halftime sub. He never makes one. You waste your time.
And believe me, I'm being patient by asking for a halftime. I want it after 25 minutes.
Yeah,
but the frustrating thing with Divock is it's a certain, almost a daft way of putting it. But he's such a confidence player. I mean, all footballers are confidence players, but he's a guy who desperately needs a run of games and to get a couple of goals, and you get such a better football.
Don't they all, though?
Yeah, no, I know. But yeah, this
I don't
is
know
the
why Divock's
Shaqiri doesn't, for example, right? Shaqiri, for all his faults, most of his faults are getting injured, right?
Shaqiri's not a wimp, though, and I just think Origi needs a bit more. I don't know what the Belgian is for gumption, but he just needs a bit more about him. Yeah, you know, he needs to get stuck in, and he needs to be stronger. And you just always think, oh, he's diffident. That's one thing I can't bear. It's a player who seems diffident about whether he gets the ball or not.
It's frustrating because I think there's something there. But as I said, Shaqiri gets on Shaqiri's been out for months, comes in the team, goes, I think I could be man of the match and score today. It might be a total delusion and he might get mishit every ball, but at least that's the body language and the intent. Divock, you see, there's a couple of things where he gets sort of threaded in the channel, and he takes, I quite like the fact that he took a swing at it, because actually with a touch more confidence you see how those go in at the near post. Do you know the ones I mean? There's one in the first half, one in the second half.
I think one of those is really interesting, and I think it actually helps him get through the rest of the game and remove some of the despised diffidence that cut from Cathy Long I think
I actually think there's something that happens in the, I've sort of convinced myself he sort of changes the game in a certain sense. His little sortie down the left wing very early in the second half, where he's done that before in games, and I know Klopp's commented when he's done it, he goes, I like that from Divock, he gives us some pace down the side. And he does that, and he makes his little dribble, and he puts a really nice little cutback ball into Mo, and Mo's just, unlike, he does connect with it, but he's blocked. And I think that's almost the first moment where it signposts to Liverpool that there's gaps emerging with West Ham. And I'm not sure, Mona, whether I would say to Divock, if I was a manager, can you just make the pitch big? Just go wide and use that bit of pace you've got. Use that intelligent bit of sort of traditional wing play element to your game and give us something that way. I'm not sure whether I'd be committed to that, or I'd say, Divock, just fucking shoot on sight. Because
it's a good ball, Rob, the one into Salah that Creswell gets in front
of.
It's a good ball, and it's worth, and then he has the shot as well in there. Okay, I think we'll see Divock. Which way Divock goes. do subscribe to the Anfield app or download the app, or do both. You get tokens at the minute, 1,000 tokens if you download the app. And if you were on a tier that wasn't the £10 tier, you'll also have received 1,000. There's no point getting them if you're on the £10 tier, you get everything anyway. But if you're on any of the others, you get you had 1,000 tokens dropped into the app. So do use them and have a little look and have a little play around. But do subscribe. If you are thinking about it, as I say, if you download the app, you get your 1,000 tokens in there in order to be able to download any type of show that you fancy that's on there. So all of that is available, and it is theanfieldrap.com/subscribe on there. And today we will be doing 3 gutter shows, already one of them done, more to come. And I will go over to my main man on the matters arising and just sort of say, Rob, as we record this, it's now 12.02. Where does the time go? Liverpool, just before 11 o'clock, are meant to have had a bid rejected for Coletta Carr. Schalke are meant to be linked with making a move for Mustafi. There is talk that Kabak might be in the process of having a medical with the Schalke staff, which shows a lot of trust from a Liverpool point of view. But, you know, we're all good lads here. It is
people taking his temperature like when you go in a shop. he's good to go. Yeah. Wash his hands.
They've probably got it on Zoom, haven't they? You know?
Yeah.
Probably doing it.
Yeah, with a JARG monitor behind.
Yeah.
It is Liverpool look as though they've done Ben Davis. We'll come back and talk about Davies or Davis. We'll come back and talk about that in a second or two. But it looks as though there is a genuine commitment for one more. We've gone from a week ago saying theoretically there's no chance of any to suddenly Liverpool looking like they're going to do two.
Yeah, very exciting, isn't it? I caught myself, you know, with transfers, it's all relative. If you're signing no one, signing a lad for £2 million from the Championship is an exciting thing to get your teeth into and to think about for a day. So I was just about getting ready to get excited and think about Ben Davies for a few hours. And then there's somebody said, could be another one. And I thought, fuck Ben Davies. He's gone. Yes, he is. Yeah. But by 10:59, I could be getting excited about Mustafi being the third one. You know what I mean? I wouldn't give a shit. And we could have just signed Koulibaly, by the way, at 5 p.m. I wouldn't give a damn. But it is, it's quite, you know what? We haven't had a deadline day. I'm halfway between sort of treating it as the entertainment spectacle it is and also sort of thinking that we really need centre-halves. We really do. Do you know, we talked about last week about whether you just go tactically, damn it, let's just put whoever we've got, Reece Williams and Nat Phillips at the back and have Henderson and Fabinho and Thiago in this dream midfield.
Yeah.
But if you've got like semi-competent guys coming in, that's all that dream in inverted commas that's nearer to being a reality. And we're going to chat shit about it all day, aren't we, Neil?
We are indeed.
Subscribe.
We will be doing that on and off. That will be coming through the day. I mean, I'm not quite sure when this will come out, so the sell might be a bit yesterday's news. Mm. Just on Davies, Rob, before I bring Ali and Kathy in on it, the thing is, there's an interesting little piece that has been written on the Deepdale Digest and in other places. Subscribe, as well. Yeah. He's strongly linked with Celtic, like he was on the verge of signing at least a pre-contract agreement with Celtic, linked with Burnley as well, which I think is interesting because the thing about him, it looks like he's got a range of passing and pace on the turn, but he's been able to mix it at centre-back in the Championship where there'll be a lot of aerial stuff as well. He's homegrown and cheap in this moment. He probably wouldn't have been cheap last summer, but you are able to look at it and say that, you know, if you're going to have a fifth choice centre-half, which is what he might end up being for Liverpool after this season, if you see what I mean, one who can do a little bit at left-back and one who is also homegrown is absolutely no bad thing. And one who comes in at a price at less than £1 million, which is what it currently looks like it is also no bad thing.
Yeah, the intriguing thing, if you're being optimistic about it, is it could be the buy before the buy. And what I mean by that is in that we often look around, say, the bottom half or the bottom two-thirds of the Premier League at some of their centre-backs and go, oh, he's decent. You know, he's
good. Well, like I'd have Tarkowski. I'd love Tarkowski. He'd be perfect. Have we bought him before he becomes Tarkowski?
A Tarkowski or a Brighton centre-back or a Norwich centre-back. Do you know what I mean? Those sort of guys, you go, they're suddenly 30 to 40 million and you go, and you find out they were only bought 18 months ago for 1 to 2 million, like this chap, Ben. And you wonder, just through we never shop in that market just because we don't, because we always have to take less risk than those teams have to do. But you wonder, through force of circumstance, it could turn out that way. And I don't think we've lost much if it hasn't, let's be right.
No, I don't think we have. And I think that what we can just take from the Phillips little showing, Cathy, is that you know, there's room for these footballers to improve when they get to Liverpool, whoever they are. It looks like Kabak is now taking the lead in terms of being a bigger money one. But there's room for them to improve as footballers, to develop as people, as people. You know, we often forget sometimes that we are dealing here with people in their early 20s, predominantly speaking. It's a huge opportunity for them as well. And serendipity is a thing. Well, it isn't. It's a concept, but you sort of get me point. That all of a sudden, if you're Davies, you wake up this morning and you're very, very excited, and you know that if you work really, 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 really hard and try your very, 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 very best, you could just be able to get a career at Liverpool.
Absolutely. And, you know, look at Andy Robertson. You know, I think he's just as a great example of that. When some people were like, why are we shopping at Hull? You know, and he didn't get straight into the side. You know, it took him a while, because I think Klopp needed him to understand the way that we played, you know, which I think is often why particularly Klopp isn't keen on bringing players in January, because they've got to be able to come straight in, really. And you haven't got months where they can be understanding how we play and how we train. So, you know, it's not an easy task, but I'm excited about Davis. I'm determined to be excited about him, despite whichever foreigners may have signed by the time this comes out, you know, which are the players. Because I do think there's still this thing where we seem to get more excited by, you know, an exotic sounded foreign player than we do with somebody called Ben from Preston, you know.
And, I like the magical foot. In years gone by, Kathy, you're able to go and buy, for instance, Burnley's centre-back for £4 million when Liverpool have a crisis. Now you can't. But I love this one. Yeah. As I say, he gets to be absolutely buzzing today. Absolutely. And that's not to say players from overseas can't, but he can.
Yeah, and it's the right level to be going at, I think. And I think, as you say, it's going to be really, really exciting for him. I think, you know, we haven't got a crowd that's there, but I think we're all going to be excited about it. I don't think he's necessarily going to be fifth choice. Anyone coming in is going to look at Matip and go, well, how long is he ever going to last?
Yep.
You know, Gomez has had his injuries. I think anyone that comes in now has got a really good chance of, as you say, anyone that works hard, stays fit. I mean, you've pretty much just got to stay on your feet at the moment to be a centre-back at Liverpool. You know, you've just got to be able to stand up. But he could be going straight in. And, you know this thing about, like, we seem to get more excited by the idea of someone from abroad. Anyone remember when in the 90s, we were linked with Fran Tierney and he was playing at Crewe? My mate's lad came into the room and there was this big thing about how we were going to sign Fran Tierney, and he was like, oh my God, I think we're going to sign Fran Tierney. It's so exciting. I went, where's he from? And I said, Crewe Alexandra. And his face dropped. He went, I thought he was from Italy. So we still talk about the non-signing of Fran Tierney, as he sounded like, you know, and he was gutted when he thought he was coming from Crewe. It's like, don't be gutted. Sign good players from Crewe.
I don't know. I think that's kind of like a non-Liverpool thing. Like, I think if you're from Bilbao or Barrow, as Ben Davies is, like,
yeah,
I think playing for Liverpool's exciting. I think that's the sort of, like, that's what we are as a football team. Like, we literally, you know, don't care how you, where you come from or whatever. Like, if you play, got the red shirt on, you're from Liverpool.
I think, oh yeah, absolutely. But I just think there's sometimes more excitement about some of the sort of, you know, exotic sort of foreign signings sometimes. And so, you know, if Nat Phillips had been somewhere else and we were talking about getting him, we'd have probably been a bit more excited about him than we are having him in the side. You know, there's always this idea that we need something new, that you've got to freshen it up, you know, get obsessed with the transfer window, you know.
Maybe Andy Robbo has, like, turned that on its head, though. I think, I think probably, you know, as she said before, Kathy, like, I think, you know, if we get a quarter of the Andy Robbo kind of ROI here, this could, you know, it could be amazing, right? He could like fit right into the team, could be really amazing, could be the chance of his life. And, you know, who wouldn't want to take that? But I'm sort of, like, really charmed by Rob's kind of self-control here about, like, having put yourself in the position of slowly got used to not being excited by transfer deadline day. Now you're, like, desperately trying to kind of ramp it up a bit.
It's like they brought Christmas back having a band. They cancelled Christmas and now it's back with a bang. I mean, do you know what I think is interesting about Ben Davies? We're continuing to be positive about it, and why shouldn't we be? He's being talked about, from what I've read in the last 12 hours or so, as being one of the very best defenders in that division in the Championship. So if he's Championship elite, is no bad club to be in. You know, Ben White, another Ben, was considered
absolutely
top three or four in that division.
Played a lot
last
of games
year.
For Brighton.
And now he's considered one of the big buys for the summer, potentially, for Liverpool. We know James Maddison a couple of years ago, one of the top midfielders in that division comes up, and so on. So the pedigree and the pathway here for someone like Ben Davis, I think, is quite good. I think people are slightly, not disturbed, but thrown off by the fact that he's 25. I think if he's 22, people go, ooh, he's 22. 25 sounds a touch past the bit where you should have been snapped up by an elite side, but you never know.
You never know. And it is just sort of worth pointing out that with Kalitakar and with Kabak and with Davies, whichever way it goes, they will all get opportunities. And often, if you move to a club like Liverpool, opportunities can be hard to come by. But we know, because there's no one else, they will find a way to at some stage be able to play centre-back for Liverpool. Rob, very quickly, because we are beginning to run out of time, just Brighton. The manager can have an eye on City, but the players can't. Did you watch them against Spurs? I thought they were terrific for an hour. I thought they were so good. McAllister and Gross were excellent. Morpay and Trossard were lively. We're going to have to be at it, to be quite honest with you. There's no room for passengers here. Obviously, we're all thinking City, and we're thinking get 3 points against Brighton and then City. But those 3 points are going to take some earning, I think, against Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yeah, I didn't see last time, but I've watched them a lot this season. They're the one team down that end of the table where I'm not sure why that's the case. I mean, I know they lost Lamptey, who looked like he had the potential to be the star of that team, but I did sort of wonder why. I think they're braver than most down that bottom half, so they're not going to be as defensive, although we'll force them into that mode at times as a lot of other teams down that end of the table. So I'm excited by the potential for us being able to be Liverpool and play our way against them, but I think we'd be very, very, I think Klopp will be very, very much against warning against complacency here and thinking we've done the two hard ones. This, as you say, this could be, you know, if someone's crystal ball, Liverpool got beat 2-0 at Anfield, they're the sort of team who could do it to us.
Getting a side out, Cathy, it's the changes that he'll make. He does have to have an eye, I will say it again, on the Manchester City game. That's his job. It's not the player's job, it's his job to have an eye on that. I wouldn't be surprised if we're in a situation where if Mane is any sort of a doubt, he doesn't start again. Fabinho rested again, because the manager does have to think about getting his best 11 on the pitch for the game against City. How do Liverpool approach Brighton? Is it unchanged from the game against West Ham, or does he maybe think about doing Curtis in the middle of the park from the outset?
I think he might. That was my thought, that he might start with Curtis in the middle to start with, and I think he'll want to get some minutes, as we always say these days, for Fabinho, maybe. We never used to talk about minutes, did we? No. It's all about minutes. I think he'll want to give Fabinho some minutes, maybe Sadio as well, but maybe not to start. I think you're right. He's got to look at that. I think he's already obviously been planning for that. You know, they do plan a few games ahead. So, yeah, I would perhaps expect that the ones who are coming on as subs might be the ones to start. You know, might just be reversing that and then on his 60 minutes or his 70 minutes changing it. And obviously, let's just hope that, you know, I don't know if there's any injury issues after
Divock went off, but there's not been much Divock talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looked like a dead leg. He just had a knock. He didn't look like a muscle, but you never know.
Yeah. I mean, I think he probably has to start, doesn't he, if Mane's not fit or if he doesn't want to risk Mane, because I can't see who else, you know, without Jota, can't see how else we can start, really.
It would be, Ali, you know, having come this far with the last two huge away wins against Tottenham and West Ham, big performances as well. Liverpool are excellent in both matches. We really don't want to see them throw it away now against Brighton. You know, they've rebuilt the platform for this season. It's one more game, and then the one against City becomes a big one, and you assess where you are afterwards. But you've got to get the 3 points against Brighton.
Oh, for sure. But Brighton are no fools. You know, they've got some players who are you know, having a good run of form, really. So it won't be a walk in the park. And of course, I mean, I can't imagine the players won't be thinking about City. But I take the point that they've just got to, you know, address the challenge in front of them. But I think Brighton are, you know, their physical side. I think they'll mean business, and yeah, we shouldn't underestimate them.
I think there's no doubt that Firmino comes back in. He was rested with a view that he plays these two games. So that,
yep.
But apart from that, he doesn't have many moves because I agree with Cathy, everyone that Fabinho and Mane, I think, are very unlikely to be risked, and I think they're touch and go for City anyway. So it's only Curtis Jones who you'd probably bring in for Milner, because I think Milner is at an age in his career where if you play him any too many minutes, I think you are risking his hamstrings, and therefore I think Curtis comes in for him. I think those who might be playing I would worry about their fitness levels coming into the City game would be Salah, Wijnaldum and Thiago, because more everybody else would have had a rest, I think, and the fullbacks obviously as well.
Okay, thank you very much indeed to Rob, to Ali and to Cathy for the Anfield Wrap this week. There was a lot to get in, a lot to get through. Massive against Brighton, transfer window stuff ongoing. But the fact of the matter is this, Liverpool have gone to London twice in 4 days, won both games 3-1, deserved all 6 points that they've got, and indeed they probably would have deserved a 7. Sports Social Podcast Network.